Things have been so good lately, Molly. I don't want to lose what we have back. This was my fault. I never should have gotten so emotional at the Black Cat. I'd probably seemed like I was about to go right off a cliff again. I felt so much steadier now. The story was just that, a story. One that meant something to me, yes, but it wasn't about me. I was caught off guard at first that it was a baby. It's true, I said. But I'm okay now. The story actually feels like it will bring closure, he said, finishing my sentence.
Yeah, I know. That's what you said before, and that's exactly what's worrying me.
That's not what I said before. I hadn't, had I?
No. You're right, he said,
his eyes sad as he stared at me.
You said it was connected to what happened to us.
He was right. That I had said. All I could do was stare at him. I didn't have any defense.
We've gone over this all before, Molly. There's never going to be closure. Not for what we lost. And you're just going to have to learn to live with that. We both will. Give the story back to Richard, Molly. He's the news reporter, not you.
I'm not giving the story to anyone, Justin, I said, feeling an unexpected flash of anger. I didn't care if Justin was well-intentioned. What he was doing and the way he was doing it were wrong. He was my husband. I needed him to support me. I have to do this. I know it doesn't make sense to you, but if I can find out what happened to this baby, maybe I can make sense of... How had I started down that path again? I did sound delusional. Every road kept leading me back to me and my baby. Justin let my unfinished sentence hang there, proof of his point.
I understand you want to do this story, and I even understand why, he said finally. But what if you're wrong about being okay? What if you're not the best judge of how you're feeling?
That's insulting. I jerked my shirt on, then pushed myself off the floor. You're talking about me like I'm... like I have some sort of permanent affliction. I was depressed, Justin. And for good reason, I might add. I'm not anymore. End of story.
I'm asking you not to do this one story, Molly, Justin said,
angry now too as he tugged on his own shirt.
Haven't I earned the right to ask for that much?
Earned the right because you took care of me. My chest felt raw as I moved away from the spot where we'd been lying. Are you seriously going to use that as a bargaining chip? You think that's fair? Justin pressed his lips together as he stood.
You know what's really not fair, Molly?
His voice was calm and deliberate. He knew better than to forfeit his credibility by losing his patience.
You trying to turn my caring about you into me being an asshole.
Well, I'm sorry if our dead baby didn't roll right off my back the way it did yours. My voice was too shrill and too loud, but I wanted to hurt him. That actually doesn't make you a better person, you know? It just makes you lucky. Justin stared at the floor, frowning, shaking his head.
I'll see you upstairs, he said.
He didn't look at me again as he stepped toward the door. But first, I'll put Ella to bed. After he was gone, I stood there alone in the kitchen in my t-shirt and underwear, furious and filled with regret. Wanting to apologize and go after him and fight some more. I was saved from having to choose when my phone rang. A number I didn't recognize. I hoped it wasn't Deckler again. Hello? I barked.
This is Chief of Police Steve Carlson, Miss Sanderson. Sorry to disturb you so late.
That's okay. I tried to soften my voice. What is it?
You were at the hospital this afternoon.
Ugh. I did not like where this was starting, much less where I knew it was headed. Yeah. My friend's cleaning woman was in a car accident. She wanted moral support. Why had I said it that way? That made Stella sound involved. Or company, that's a better way of putting it. My friend can be a little dramatic, even in situations that don't involve her. Oh, great. Dramatic? What was wrong with me? Just because it was true didn't mean it was something I should be saying to the police. And not saying Stella's name didn't make it any better, no matter what I was trying to tell myself.
What time did you leave the hospital?
Probably around 1 p.m., I said. I went to the university for an interview.
Okay. Could you please call me if you hear from Stella?
No, I will not. That was what I wanted to say. And why should I go around reporting on the whereabouts of a friend? But refusing seemed awfully confrontational under the circumstances. Sure, I said hesitantly. Can you tell me why?
Rose Gowan is gone,
Steve said.
And so, it seems, is your friend Stella.
I dreamed of babies. Dead ones. One of them was mine. But I didn't know which, in a room full of little caskets. I startled awake, bolting upright in the darkness. I could see the outline of Justin, sleeping on his side next to me. I put a hand on him to check that he was breathing, then curled up tight behind him, pretending we hadn't argued earlier. It seemed such a silly waste now. And with those kinds of dreams, it was hard to maintain that the story wasn't having an effect on me. When I awoke again, it was almost 7 a.m. and Justin was already gone. He'd left a note. Conference at Columbia. Back late. There was another one of his little notes, too. I felt a pang of guilt about our fight the night before. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul. Emily Dickinson. I rolled over and picked up my cell phone off my nightstand and sent Justin a text. I know you're just trying to help. Sorry about last night. XO. I didn't expect him to answer, but he did. Right away. I'm sorry, too. And I do believe in you, Molly, more than you'll ever know. XO. I felt relieved as I headed downstairs. Glad that Justin and I were no longer technically in a fight. Glad also that there'd been no overnight text from Stella. Angry that I'd talked to Steve. Ella had even slept later than usual, leaving me time for a quiet cup of coffee before we got swept into the morning routine. But as soon as I stepped into the living room, I was unnerved by something out of place. There was a small cardboard file box sitting a few feet inside our front door. Some kind of gift from Justin? Except the closer I got, the more it seemed an odd box for a present. Also, Molly Sanderson was written in large black letters across the top, and it didn't look like Justin's handwriting. I pulled my phone out of my sweatshirt pocket and sent Justin another text, hoping to catch him before he lost a signal when the train went into Penn Station. Is the box a peace offering?
What box?
Come on, the box by the front door?
I'm all for peace offerings, but I don't know anything about a box.
I took the stairs two at a time. Someone had been in our house. Someone could still be in our house. Maybe Ella wasn't asleep. Maybe something had been done to her. I threw open her bedroom door so hard that it banged against the wall. Ella jerked up from a dead sleep. Mommy! She shouted, bursting into terrified tears. But she was okay. She was fine. That was the most important thing. I sucked in a mouthful of air. Okay. Ella was fine. Now I had to pull myself together and get the two of us out of the house, just in case whoever had been in the house was still there. It's okay, sweetheart, I said, trying to stay calm as I pulled Ella out of bed and into my arms. I sounded out of breath. I probably looked scared to death, too. Luckily, Ella was still half asleep. I thought we could go out for pancakes. You know, special treat. But I'm tired, Ella whined, rubbing her eyes as she wrapped her legs around my waist. I don't want breakfast. I want to go back to sleep. I know, Peanut, I know. I rubbed her back as I headed down the steps. I paused only long enough to grab my car keys and purse, not long enough to notice it was pouring outside, much less to grab an umbrella. I rushed down the front walkway toward the car, with Ella in her Hello Kitty pajamas, trying to shield her from the deluge, relieved to see that I was at least in yoga pants and a sweatshirt and not naked. Getting soaked, I buckled Ella into the car seat smoothly and slowly, smiling the whole time, as though that might convince her she'd imagined all of our racing around. Once I'd climbed in the driver's seat and locked the doors tight, I wiped the rain off my face, grinning at her in the rear view. But she just turned her sleepy, grumpy face to the side as I backed slowly out of the driveway. It wasn't until I'd driven 3 streets away that it felt safe to pull over. I turned off the wipers, and the drumming rain quickly blurred out the windshield. When I looked up at Ella in the rear view again, she was clutching her blanket and sucking her thumb, sound asleep.
"Steve Carlson," he answered on the first ring.
He sounded like I'd woken him. In bed with Barbara, surely, and yet it was so hard to picture. "This is Molly Sanderson. I'm sorry to bother you so early," I began. "But I had your number in my phone from last night, and I wasn't sure who else to call. I think someone was in my house."
"Are you inside your house now?"
he asked. Serious, official, cop-like. My heart picked up speed again. I'd been so prepared to be dismissed out of hand. "No, I'm in my car a few blocks away with my daughter. Someone left a box in my living room while we were asleep. I'm sure I'm overreacting, but..."
"Stay where you are for now," Steve said. "Give me your address and I'll check it out."
By the time Steve had called me to return home, it was barely misting. He was leaning against an unmarked car, maybe just his car, when I arrived, looking much younger in jeans and a long-sleeved T-shirt. I parked behind him, quietly unbuckling my seatbelt and leaving the car running as I got out, hoping Ella would stay asleep.
"Morning,"
he said, nodding at me, then flicking his eyes disapprovingly in the direction of my humming car. "I was hoping Ella would stay asleep in there," I explained. Steve nodded, but his brow stayed furrowed.
"Well, there's no one in your house."
"That's a relief," I said. "I was home with Ella alone. My husband left early. And when I woke up, there was this strange box sitting inside our living room. I guess I kind of panicked."
"Did your husband leave the door unlocked when he left?"
"Maybe," I said. "Because entering without breaking in wasn't a big deal. Except someone had still invited him or herself into my home and left God knows what. A baby." My crazy brain jumped there. "A dead baby in a box." I was lucky Justin couldn't read my mind. "We lock the door at night and when we go out, but when we are home during the day..." "No one in the suburbs ever locks their door," I wanted to say. "That's the whole point of living here."
"In the future, I'd keep it locked always. Ridgedale isn't a big city, but reasonable precautions make sense anywhere."
He nodded toward my car.
"I also wouldn't leave a sleeping child unattended in a running car."
"Right, of course," I said, fully mortified. "Did you, check what was inside the box?"
"Just enough to see that it's some kind of papers."
He held up his hand.
"Didn't read what's on them. Don't want to be accused of interfering with the press. My guess is someone put them inside to keep them out of the rain."
We didn't have any overhang, and it had been pouring. The box would have gotten soaked. And so the person just went ahead and opened our door? Steve was presenting it like a normal thing to do. But it wasn't normal. Not even in Ridgedale. What happens now?
That's up to you. Happy to open an investigation, but you should know we'll need to keep the box, mark it as evidence.
That hadn't occurred to me.
That's why I mention it. I'm not trying to discourage you from pursuing this. That's entirely up to you. But this kind of thing happens. Years ago, during some mayoral campaign, somebody put a dead rat in Jim McManus's mailbox. He was the Reader's editor-in-chief at the time.
Steve shook his head.
Man, was his wife bent out of shape. Anyway, my guess is this has something to do with your articles. Isn't that what you people want? A reaction?
Steve was aggravated about something I'd written.
That was obvious.
You people?
Meaning your editors.
He rubbed his forehead. He still looked aggravated, but also like he didn't want to be.
Nothing personal, but they must like that you're willing to stir the pot. That's all I meant. It must sell papers or get you clicks or whatever it is you all want these days.
But my articles had been far from controversial. Is there something specific I've written that you're taking issue with?
Just pointing out the facts. And the fact is, you've riled people up. This find him, he's out there, another Ridgedale murder nonsense. People are going crazy in the comments to your articles.
I felt a queasy twist in my stomach. I didn't even want to know those comments existed. Between that and the files and the pressure from Justin, I might beat a hasty retreat from journalism after all. I wouldn't know about that, I said, and I didn't like the feeling that Steve did. I don't read the comments on my articles. Steve frowned and looked uncomfortable. He wasn't frustrated with me, I was realizing. He was just frustrated.
So what'll it be with the situation here?
He asked, looking at his watch. I didn't much want to see what was in the box, but I couldn't imagine letting the police take it without looking through it first. What if it was something important? I don't think I'll pursue investigating, but thank you so much for coming. I did appreciate the way Steve had rushed over, no questions asked. He nodded, pushed himself off his car, and turned toward the driver's door.
Not a problem. Call me if anything else comes up.
Before you go, is there any news about the baby? I asked.
You're interviewing me now?
Steve raised an eyebrow as he stood in his open car door.
Seriously?
You're here. I shrugged. And you did say I could follow up. He shook his head and exhaled.
You don't give up, do you?
The old me did not. It was good being reminded of her. Justin was wrong about this story. It was exactly what I needed. No, I don't.
Emmy says it'll be another couple days before we have an official cause of death.
Does that mean he's still having a hard time determining it? Steve's face tightened.
It means it's going to take another couple days.
But it could still be a homicide.
It hasn't been ruled out. All the more reason we need someone to come forward. And that, I hope you do right. Someone out there knows who this baby belongs to. And we need to hear from them.
My phone vibrated with a text. I pulled it out, thinking it was Justin needing further reassurance that Ella and I were okay after my first cryptic text about some anonymous box. Coffee after drop-off? Stella. Shit. Did she seriously have to text me with Steve standing right here staring at me? He'd specifically asked me to contact him if I heard from her. I'd have to say something. I couldn't lie for her, not that much. I'd just say as little as I could. Stella. I held up my phone. I guess she's back. Why had I made it sound like she was on the run? Or here. I don't know that she ever left.
Yes, I spoke with Stella late last night, Steve said. She claims she doesn't know where Rose is. Was surprised as anyone to hear that she had disappeared.
You don't sound like you believe her. Steve had a hand on the door and one leg in the car. He looked back at me.
Would you?
Ridgedale Reader, Print Edition, March 18, 2015. Body of deceased female infant discovered near Essex Bridge. By Molly Sanderson. The body of a female infant was discovered early yesterday morning by Ridgedale University campus safety in a wooded area near the Essex Bridge. The cause of death and exact age of the infant remain unknown, pending the release of official findings by the medical examiner. The grim discovery of the baby's body has come as a shock to many in the community. "I can't believe something like this happened here," said Stephanie Kelser, a mother of two who has lived in Ridgedale for 7 years. "What a tragedy." Others saw the situation differently. "People here like to pretend they're perfect," says Patrick Walker, owner of Pat's Pancakes. "But they've got the same problems as anywhere else. They've just got more money to cover it up." Historically, crime rates in Ridgedale have been very low, with minor property crimes the most common offense. Serious crime is all but non-existent in town. In the past 2 decades, there have only been 2 murders and 6 reported rapes. However, these numbers may not reflect all crime that occurs on the university's campus. While there are federal reporting requirements, offenses involving students will often be handled exclusively as a violation of the university's disciplinary code. The Ridgedale Police Department has asked that anyone with information relating to the infant's identity or cause of death contact them as soon as possible at 888-526-1899.
Jenna. May 20th, 1994. We hung out after school today in the woods near the captain's parents' house. He got some beers, and I was going to say no thanks so he didn't think I was some drunk loser, but then I thought, if he was drinking too... He asked me about my parents and told me about his. They sound kind of uptight and whatever, but he said that they would really like me. Did you hear that? His parents would really like me. What guy talks about you meeting his parents unless he's seriously into you? He asked me about Tex, too.
That dude would ditch his girlfriend in a second for you.
That's what the captain said. And it sounded like they're not even that good of friends, which is strange because I thought they were. But who knows, guys are weird. I told the captain the truth. I like Tex as a friend, but just a friend. And what's not to like? Tex is always saying how amazing I am because I'm a spitfire instead of a whack job inappropriate nutso, like my parents think. Too crazy, too loud, too wild. My voice, my clothes, my friends, my thoughts. I embarrass them, that's the bottom line. Always have, always will. And so, yeah, I like that Tex gets me, and he's sweet and nice and tries to watch out for me, even when he's getting in the way. But he doesn't do anything for me, even if I sometimes kind of wish he did. Not in that way, not at all. And you can't make a fire by pretending there's a spark. And you know what the captain said when I told him that Tex and I are just friends? He said, "Good." And then he kissed me, soft and sweet and slow. And so, you know what I did? Gave him a BJ, best one of my fucking life.
Sandy. It was early, a little past 9 a.m., as Sandy waited on the front steps of Lori's building. She'd already rung the buzzer 3 times. There hadn't been an answer, just like there hadn't been any of the 5 previous times she'd come by in the past 24 hours. But Sandy had kept coming back, because Lori was the last person who'd talked to Jenna. More important, she'd talked to this so-called friend of Jenna's who might have been the very last person to see her. In between coming by Lori's, Sandy had kept riding around looking for Jenna, and calling and calling and calling. Late the night before, the calls had started going straight to voicemail. Sandy had been waiting for that to happen. Still, it hit her hard, like some kind of nail in Jenna's coffin. Monty had called Sandy, said he was going to start driving around looking for Jenna. Sandy wanted to say no, that she didn't need his help. But she did need it. Jenna did too. Sandy closed her eyes there on Lori's steps, tilted her face to the sun, wishing it would light her skin on fire. At least then she might feel something again. Because she was slowly going numb. First her toes, then her feet and legs. Now the deadness was creeping up her arms. Her phone buzzed in her pocket. By now she knew better than to get her hopes up. Sure enough, it was a text from Hannah. "I need to see you, please." This girl was literally killing her. "Can't right now. Meeting someone. I'll text when I'm done." "Okay, but as soon as you can." "Or I'll tell someone." That was the threat, sitting there, just out of reach. Sandy started down the steps, wondering what she should do or where she should go next, when Lori's door finally swung open. "What do you want?" Lori shouted before she even stepped out, her face all screwed up and red. "Oh, it's you." She blinked at Sandy, then she exhaled and slumped against the doorframe. Her square, white blonde bob was perfectly smooth, and she was wearing a short kimono-like robe that was too small for her wide hips. "Sorry, Sandy. I thought you were the goddamn police again. The intercom's broken, so I've had to come down 4 stupid flights every time they've shown up, which has been at least 6 times. I started ignoring it, but they just keep coming and coming." "Police?" Sandy couldn't help thinking it had something to do with Jenna. "They're looking for my roommate, Rose, and they think I'm lying about her not being here, so they keep coming back and coming back, ringing my damn doorbell at all hours. Like if Rose is hiding upstairs, she's all of a sudden going to forget and answer the door." Sandy wondered how many of these supposed visits from the police had been her ringing Lori's buzzer. "Why do they want Rose? They won't tell me. They'll harass the crap out of me, but won't tell me why. Who knows? Maybe Rose's parents put them up to it. You know, I love that girl. I was even willing to put up with a baby, long as goddamn 3 weeks of my life. But between the police and her parents and her stalker, I think she needs to find a new place to live. Assuming she comes back." "You don't know where she went?" "Not a clue. She left 2 days ago with the baby and some of her stuff. Said she was going to see a friend." Lori rolled her eyes. "You know me. I don't like to ask questions." "And who's her stalker? Blonde woman?" That's what Sandy was thinking. "Real tall guy, buzzed hair, super intense. I thought at first he was some kind of cop or, I don't know, a soldier or something. Way uptight. Eric, that's what he said his name was. For all I know, he's Rose's baby daddy. She never would tell me who that was. For her sake, I hope not, because he was old as shit." She rolled her eyes again. "But that hippy-dippy crap of hers makes her do some weird stuff sometimes. Anyway, what are you doing here?"
"I'm looking for Jenna," Sandy said, feeling even more stressed. Because this was it. Lori was pretty much her only hope. After her, it was all dead ends. "Monty said you were talking to Jenna at the end of her shift the night before last." Lori's face screwed up. "No, I don't think..." Then a light bulb went off. "Oh, wait, yeah, I was," she said, nodding, seeming half surprised at the memory. "I did talk to Jenna for just a minute.
I would have hung out with her for longer, but that friend of hers... She whistled quietly and shook her head. I'm sure she's a nice person and whatever, if she's your mom's friend. But there was just something about her. Not to be rude, but she was kind of a bitch. Do you know what her name was? Lori shook her head, made a disgusted face. Blonde hair, puffy cheeks, bad jeans. Nothing like Jenna, that's for sure. Drink club soda, too. Weird, I'm telling you, the two of them hanging out. But you know Jenna. Maybe she was working some angle. That's why I love Jenna. She's always got an angle. And they left together? If that's what Monty said. Lori checked her watch. I got distracted by some idiot. Same idiot who won't get the hell out of my bed right now and get his ass back to campus. If you hear from Jenna, can you tell her to call me? You got it, sweetie. But don't you worry about her. She waved a hand. Jenna will come rolling in any minute with a wicked headache and some crazy-ass story to tell. She always does. Sandy stood across the street from the police station, airing out her hands so they wouldn't feel clammy if a police officer shook one. Last thing she wanted was to go inside, into the lion's den, but she was out of options. She was even kind of hoping Jenna might be there, safe and sound and sobering up on some little cot. Hey. When Sandy turned, there was Aiden, silhouetted by the sun. She lifted a hand to her eyes so she could make him out better in the glare. She hated how happy she was to see him. Her heart skipped an actual stupid beat. And she was the one who'd been ignoring Aiden's texts and then his calls since yesterday, freezing him out on purpose. What she and Aiden had was fun and whatever, but Sandy wasn't dumb enough to think he had any role in this actual real-life situation. "What are you doing here?" she asked. "And why do you look like such shit?" Aiden was pale, with dark circles under his eyes, and his hair was a mess. He crossed his arms in front of him, tucking his hands under the opposite armpit. "Kind of hard to get a good night's sleep when your girlfriend is trying to break up with you." "Girlfriend?" Sandy laughed, because she really thought he was joking. But he was staring straight at her, his eyes glowing in the sun like polished amber. "So, you just happened to see me here? If by happened you mean I've been driving around looking for you ever since that last text you sent? You were supposed to meet me after I stayed in class, remember? So you've been stalking me? I prefer search and rescue." Sandy turned away. Already she could feel herself caving, giving into temptation. She should have said, "Fuck you, I don't need a rescue," because she didn't. But she did want to let go, to let all of it crash over and wash her away. She couldn't tell Aiden the worst of it. She couldn't tell anyone that. But maybe she could tell him something. And then, for one second, she wouldn't be alone with all of it anymore. "There's just a lot of shit right now," she said.
"Like what?"
"Like we're getting evicted from our apartment." Sandy stared right at Aiden, daring him to screw it up by looking shocked and appalled. He didn't blink. "And now I can't find Jenna."
"What do you mean?"
He looked worried, but not in a bad way. "That I can't fucking find Jenna. I've looked everywhere for her, and I've called her a million times. Last time anyone saw her was at work a day and a half ago."
"Did you tell the police?"
"About what?" Sandy felt a guilty twist.
About your missing mom?"
He looked at Sandy, like maybe she was being dumb on purpose.
"They should be out looking for her or whatever."
"I'm thinking about it." She nodded in the direction of the police station. "But what if she's high out of her mind somewhere? It's not like your mom being gone." Yeah, I don't think my mom's the police's favorite right now either. What are you talking about? The police showed up looking for her last night. Aiden pulled out a cigarette and offered one to Sandy. She waved it off, too nervous to smoke. My mom loved it, too. Wouldn't shut up about it afterward. He made a face, imitating her. The police are so stupid. They'll believe anything. She's full of shit, anyway. She just wants to pretend she knows something that somebody might care about. About what? It felt like he was avoiding telling her. That baby they found, I think, he said quietly. He seemed embarrassed. Like I said, she doesn't actually know anything. They stood in silence for a minute longer, facing the police station. Let me help you look for your mom, Aiden said finally. Sandy could feel him staring at the side of her face, but she kept her eyes down. Her throat felt thick. No, I don't think... Come on, give me a chance not to be the asshole everybody thinks I am. You won't owe me anything, if that's what you're thinking. I want to help. What Sandy really wanted right then, more than anything, was someone to help her, to take care of her. She wanted a mom. That was the truth, even if she didn't want to admit it. And not Jenna. No matter how much she wanted to find her, what Sandy wanted was a real mom. A regular one. But what she had was Aiden. And maybe he was something. Okay, Sandy said, because letting him help wasn't the same thing as needing him to. For now. Relax, Sandy told herself inside the musty old police station. She was alone. Going in with Aiden would have been too suspicious. She'd sent him to check the hospital for Jenna. She'd been avoiding that, too. The creaky floor and stale air reminded her of a place she'd gone on a field trip as a kid, back when they lived for a year in South Jersey. Some colonial house where the kids were taught how to churn butter, except no one had gotten it to work. Only difference here were the flags lined up against the wall, and the pictures of all those friendly fellas in uniform who could easily arrest her any time they wanted. Keep it the fuck together.
Stapler, stapler, stapler,
a tall guy behind the desk was muttering, half to Sandy and half to himself.
You'd think finding office supplies wouldn't be the hardest part of this job, but I tell you, sometimes...
He reached forward and grabbed something.
Ah, here it is.
He stapled the pages, then looked up at Sandy. Fucking instantly, he looked suspicious, and she hadn't even opened her mouth. A teenager alone in the police station? Of course he was wondering what her deal was. But the more he looked at Sandy, the more it felt like he was trying to see right through her. Like maybe he already had.
Can I help you?
He asked. It was too late to run. Her only choice was to calm the hell down. Yeah, she said softly. I'm looking for my mom. She didn't come home the night before last. She was with some friend right before she left work, or I don't really know if she was a friend. The people my mom works with think she was. Some woman with blonde hair, they said. She was the last person to see my mom, I guess. But they didn't get her name, so I've no way to find her. Now that Sandy had gotten herself talking, she could not shut up. And she... Well, my mom isn't always the most dependable person, but she always comes home, you know, eventually.
Hmm.
The police officer's brow furrowed. He looked less suspicious and more concerned.
How long since you last spoke to her?
The night before last, she said.
And how old are you?
Shit. Child Protective Services. Sandy hadn't thought of that. But she couldn't lie now. Too big a risk that she would get caught. She just had to hope that leaving a kid her age alone wasn't some kind of crime. 16? but I don't want to get her in trouble or anything. She's a great mom, really. Except Sandy had already said that Jenna wasn't that dependable. Why had she said that? The police officer stared at her some more, squinting now, like he was trying to figure out where he'd seen Sandy before. But no one had seen her. She was sure of that much. He reached over the desk and held out his hand.
"I'm Steve," he said. "What's your name?"
"Sandy."
"Okay, Sandy. Lucky for you, I've got a soft spot for daughters."
He waved for her to follow him into the next room.
"If I put your mom in the system, there's a chance this will end up getting bounced to social services. And that could make a mess of things for both of you when your mom shows up an hour from now. Why don't we start with a quick off-the-record search, just to make sure she hasn't been in an accident or anything?"
"Thanks," Sandy said. "A lot."
"No problem,"
Steve said, leading the way to his office. Sandy sat in the chair in front of Steve's desk as he hunted and pecked his way across the keyboard, finally getting to a screen filled with numbers and blank lines. Then he reached for some reading glasses, peering down his nose through them at the screen. At this rate, Sandy could be there for hours. He turned to her and smiled.
"As you can see, I don't do this much."
And judging from his big office, Steve wasn't a regular police officer. He was the police officer, the one in charge. Sandy looked up at the bookcase over his head. A couple of framed certificates, a diploma, and a trophy with a basketball player on top. On the second shelf, she noticed the pictures. Dozens of family snapshots. Her eyes settled on one in the middle, a family of four, clustered together on the beach, all smiles and lit up by the sun. And right there, in the center, a face she fucking recognized. Hannah. Jesus Christ. That would have been something nice to know. You know, hey, for what it's worth, my dad's the chief of police. But it wasn't like Hannah had lied. They'd never talked about their dads, only their moms. Always their moms.
"Wait, your mom wouldn't let you what?"
Sandy had asked a month or two into their sessions, choking on her coffee. Hannah had been telling another insane story about her mom. They seemed extra insane because Hannah seemed to think they were totally normal. At least Sandy knew Jenna was screwed up. They'd been studying at the Black Cat again. Hannah always wanted to go there. She said she felt more comfortable around the college kids, though Sandy always felt like Hannah was waiting to see someone. Like maybe she had a crush on a barista or something. Sandy even asked once whether there was someone, and Hannah had blown her off with the usual, "You know I don't date yet." "My mom wouldn't let me wear sparkles," Hannah said.
"Sparkles? What are you, Dora the Explorer?"
Hannah started laughing so hard that her face got all red. "I mean, when I was little," she said when she'd caught her breath. "I always wanted to wear those sneakers that are all covered in glitter, you know?"
"No, I don't know," Sandy said.
"Like the junk drawer, glitter sneakers, another of life's mysteries. But I gotta be honest, they sound ugly as shit."
"Yeah,"
Hannah said, this time with a forced laugh. But she looked kind of sad as she turned to look out the window. She was so pretty in the light. Delicate and soft in a way that Sandy would never be. As Hannah's smile sank, Sandy watched her try to lift it back up. "They were ugly, I guess. But I cried for so long when she said no. I couldn't stop crying, which only made my mom madder." Her eyes got wide, remembering. "Like she really, really hated me." "I'm sure she doesn't hate you," Sandy thought about saying. But she didn't like it when people said that kind of bullshit to her. As if them thinking the world was always so perfect and right would make it so.
That's messed up. What did you do?
Do? Hannah blinked at Sandy. With my mom, there's nothing to do, except try not to make her mad the next time. I'm always trying to do that, to be the person she wants me to be.
Is it working?
Not really. Hannah shook her head. Her eyes were glassy.
Don't you ever just want to say fuck off instead? Sandy asked.
I mean, no offense, but isn't she supposed to be the person who loves you no matter what?
Even Jenna did that.
I think about it sometimes, a lot, even, Hannah said, looking down. She was quiet for a while before she looked up. But that would just make her hate me forever. Maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it would make her change. Sandy wasn't sure who she was talking about, Hannah's mom or Jenna.
No, Hannah said softly, picking her pencil up and focusing again on her schoolwork.
My mom will never change.
Yikes, Steve said. When Sandy snapped her eyes down from the pictures, he was pointing toward the scab on her arm.
What happened there?
Shit. Sandy had let her sleeve ride up.
Oh, I fell off my bike.
She wrinkled her nose like a little kid, you know. These things happen. But her heart was pounding.
Breathe, fucking breathe. It's just a question. One that anybody would ask, not just a cop. At least my bike's okay.
I don't know about that. Steve shook his head. Bike can be replaced. You can't. Hope you're not riding around at night without reflective gear. I'm telling you, there are more bicyclist fatalities that way. Gotta be careful out there.
Yeah, I mean...
Sandy shook her head, feeling sick.
I have reflectors.
Good, good, okay. Now, I'm ready here with this system. Spell your mom's full name for me.
Steve was leaning over his computer again, fingers raised above the keyboard.
Jenna Mendelson, M-E-N-D-E-L-S-O-N.
Steve didn't type, didn't move. He stayed frozen like that, hands floating over the keys. Sandy could feel her stomach pushing up. Was Jenna already dead and Steve knew it? Did the mention of her name click the pieces into place? Slowly, he turned to look at Sandy peeling off his glasses. The friendly dad look on his face was totally gone. Now there was a full-on cop there, and it was scaring the hell out of her.
I think maybe we should start again.
At the beginning, he said, staring dead at her.
When exactly was the last time you saw your mother?
Molly. May 18th, 2013. What I told Dr. Zomer was not the whole truth. I didn't even tell Justin that. But I think he knew. Of course he did. I did drop a glass, and I did slip and cut my hand a little when I was trying to clean it up. That's all true. When I saw the blood on my hand, I didn't feel upset or worried. I felt relieved, like the world had been rebalanced. I don't even remember picking up the piece of glass that I cut my arm with. But I did. I must have. I do remember being careful not to cause any real damage, in my non-expert medical opinion. Because I could have, if I'd wanted to. I could have done so much more. And then Ella started to cry. One of her night terrors. And so I ran to her without thinking. Because I could do that by then. Comfort her after a bad dream. I didn't realize how much that small cut was already bleeding.
I had Ella in my arms when Justin came home a few minutes later. As soon as he saw us, he started yelling, "Where's she bleeding? Where's she bleeding?" It wasn't until I looked down that I saw Ella's head was covered in blood. A second later, I passed out. Luckily, Justin caught me, and Ella, thank God, as I fell. Next thing I knew, the paramedics were lifting me into the ambulance. Halfway to the hospital, they realized that the cut to my arm wasn't serious, that I'd passed out not from blood loss, but from the sight of it all over my daughter. Justin lied and told the paramedics that he had been there, seen the whole thing, that it had been an accident, me and the broken glass and my arm. And watching Justin do that for me, lie, like his life depended on it, like my life depended on it, and it might have. They could have hospitalized me against my will. I have never loved him more. And so when he'd insisted the next day that I go see Dr. Zomer, I went. It was the least I could do. Molly. I got you a latte, Stella said when I got to the Black Cat. She was at a table by the window, two coffees already in front of her. Full-fat milk, of course, because that's all they serve in this godforsaken place. Her nostrils flared. Honestly, I don't understand why you like it here. It reminds me of the city, I said, as I sat down across from her, trying not to think of the box of files I'd had Steve leave in our living room. The box that was left by some stranger. A reader, maybe? But an angry one? A happy one? Who was to say? Thinking of it still inside my house filled me with dread. I wasn't sure that I'd done the right thing, not reporting it as a crime. I'd gone back inside after Steve left, but only long enough to get Ella dressed and to change out of the yoga pants I'd slept in. I deliberately avoided looking at the box. After Ella was safely at school, I'd planned to go home and look inside. Except now I was doing my damnedest to avoid the house. I was so stressed about the whole thing, I was even tempted to tell Stella. But that box was exactly the strange turn of events she lived for. She'd have us rushing back to my house to go through every last page. Cockroaches would remind you of the city, too, you know, Stella went on. But that doesn't mean we need to start importing them. Oh, wait. I didn't tell you, did I? She leaned forward conspiratorially. Zachary and I are having lunch after my lesson today. Really? I was relieved to be talking about something silly like Stella's endless, but largely half-hearted, pursuit of her 31-year-old tennis coach. It gave me an excuse not to ask the questions I had about Rose and her baby and Aiden. I wasn't sure I was ready for the answers. I startled when my phone buzzed on the table. "Wow, jumpy much?" Stella asked, intrigued. "Who is it?" "Richard Englander." I was surprised it had taken Richard all the way up until 9:30 to call me again. It was his third call. There had also been a couple of texts. He was back in the office and wanted in on the biggest story that had hit Ridgedale in years. In fairness, it would have been his if he hadn't been out. His first message the night before had been nice, just checking in to see if I needed any help. But each one had gotten more insistent. I let his call go straight to voicemail, fairly certain I'd never listened to the message. And absolutely sure I wasn't giving him the story back. Not unless and until Eric made me. So you were saying, lunch with Zachary? I turned back to Stella. Really? Wait a second. Don't try to change the subject. She pointed a finger at me. What's wrong? Who was that? It was just that guy, the other reporter from the Reader, the young one. The asshole? Yes, him. He's the news reporter. The baby would have been his story if he hadn't been out sick, I said. He wants me to hand it over. Screw him, Stella said. You're doing a great job. I read that piece of yours this morning about, what's it called, neonaticide? It was really, she searched for a word, impassioned. Yeah, well, it would definitely make Justin happy if I let Richard take over.
Oh, yeah?
She paused, pressing her lips together. I could always see Stella bracing to pounce whenever I complained about Justin, which was why I never did. She loved to bitch about husbands. Ex, current, prospective, it didn't matter. He's worried I'm going to have some kind of breakdown because it's about a baby. Stella stared at me for a long time, her expression unreadable.
Are you?
Her tone was matter-of-fact. As though, yes, a calamitous mental breakdown was always a possibility, just an utterly unremarkable one. And that was why I loved her.
No, I said.
Not only did I mean it, but it felt true. I'm really not. I know it doesn't make any sense, but I actually feel better than I have in years.
Then as your friend, I say you need to do it, Stella said with unusual seriousness.
There was an unfamiliar look on her face, too. Sincerity. Regardless of what makes sense, and notwithstanding what Justin wants.
Right. Screw the damn husband, I said with a gentle smile. I didn't think that was what Stella meant, but she could be flip about marriage.
She looked wounded. I'm just saying sometimes there are things you need to do, no matter what anyone says about it.
So what ended up happening with Rose? I asked, knowing it was time to change the subject. And I needed to clear the air. My suspicions were surely ridiculous. They felt ridiculous. But a little proof would be nice.
You know, the police called me looking for her.
And you?
Yes, apparently I needed permission to take my aunt to the Philadelphia Flower Show.
Stella didn't seem the least bit surprised or concerned.
Anyway, Rose took off. I told the police that. And can you blame her? They will eventually figure out that it wasn't her baby, but in the meantime, why should she stick around while they harass her?
Anyway, I don't think that's why she left. I think it was the baby's father.
She told me she wasn't on her way to work when she got into that accident. She was leaving town. She wouldn't tell me details, but I think she was scared.
How can you be sure she's okay? Have you spoken to her?
Are you saying you think I lied to the police when I said I didn't know where she went?
Stella asked with exaggerated offense.
Working on this story has made you awfully suspicious, Miss Sanderson.
I'm just saying, what if the baby's father came and took her from the hospital?
That's what you're worried about? Rose's safety? Stella asked.
She could tell I wasn't convinced Rose was in the clear. Stella was hard to manipulate.
That baby is not Rose's baby. Didn't they say it was a newborn? Rose's baby was at least 3 weeks old, and she wasn't a small baby.
Approximately newborn, I clarified.
I don't think they know for sure.
Well, well, you've certainly drunk the Kool-Aid, Stella said.
You sound just like them, Molly, and I don't mean that as a compliment.
Before I could defend myself, and it would have been a lame defense, Stella was distracted by a text.
Great, she said.
Then she spoke aloud at an annoyed clip, the contents of the response she was typing.
Why aren't you in school, Aiden?
She shook her head and looked up at me.
You'd think he'd know enough not to text me when he's supposed to be in class. Aiden's crappy behavior might bother me less if it didn't always make him look so damn stupid.
Sounds like things are the same with him, then.
Aiden, the flower girl. I could still hear Ella's little voice. What's a slut, Mommy?
There was surely an explanation. I just needed to hear it. And I needed to figure out a way to get Stella to tell me without having to ask her outright. Because I liked Stella. And I wasn't sure our relationship could survive that kind of direct accusation.
Things with Aiden never change.
She shrugged, frowned. I just have to accept that I have no control over what he does. Maybe Aiden will end up fine, and maybe he won't. That's terrifying, but it's also reality. I can't drive myself crazy waiting to see how he'll turn out.